It's time for This Week in the Lakeville Journal. Finally, we are joined by Janet Manco. Good morning, Janet.
Good morning.
And Cynthia Hosmander. Good morning, Cynthia.
Good morning.
And how are you both?
Good. And sorry, you know, it's I who caused this. I'm in a different location this morning at the office, so sorry about that, but happy to be here.
That's okay, we're happy to have you here. Let's go right to the front pages of the Lakeville Journal, and I'm going to start with the smaller story to the side because I love the headline. Towns grapple with broadband, garbage, and how to use federal funds.
There are certain stories that are evergreen, and they happen year after year after year. And Janet and I both spend a lot of time in the archives of the Lakeville Journal, and there are certain stories that you see a lot. So, of course, in the 70s, we didn't see stories about broadband, but garbage has been an issue around here. Federal funds have been a big issue. Bears, of course, have been a big issue. So here we are with ARCOG, which is the regional organization of first selectmen from 21 area towns. And they have an organization that's been working with them called Northwest Connect. That's all volunteer and has been trying to increase and improve Internet access here, which especially now with COVID is such a big deal as children more and more are online and people are working from home. So ongoing conversations about that, the answer is still not found. And then garbage is a topic that's going to come up throughout this issue. This issue is themed in many ways, and one of the themes is garbage. And on the same page, you can see right next to that little story, the bigger story by Terry Cowgill, who was a longtime reporter and editor for our company, and has been up at the Berkshire Edge in Massachusetts for a long time. And he's a very good person at taking a lot of disparate strands and explaining them in a way that is understandable. So he's talking about something that's very important to all of us, and I would bet most people who read our paper have not really paid attention to it, and that is that the place that we transfer our trash to from our transfer stations is about to close this summer. The state is trying to figure out what to do. And in the meantime, they're planning to ship the garbage out to another state. And the fact that they haven't figured out which state yet makes me wonder if all the other states are saying, we don't want your garbage. However, it's going to be very expensive to do that. They have to get all of the towns. I can't remember how many towns is in our MIRA district, but all the towns have to sign on before they do it. And I would say most of the towns in our region are reluctant to do it because it's going to be more expensive, but also people have sort of a moral, ethical feeling about shipping our garbage out. So a very tough decision. Eventually, they'll all sort of have to sign on with the state plan because there's not really another option. But I think it's going to be a year where we all really think a lot about our garbage and how we dispose of it and what we do with compost, for example, and other heavy garbage. So Terry starts off a very long analysis this week, super thorough, very interesting, and he'll continue in our issue of next.
All right. And then right below that, I love the picture of the piece of equipment that Swasa folks got last year, which really replaces about the need for 10 volunteers, and that is when they push the snow to the landing hill and stuff like that. They're continuing after a 70-degree day yesterday. We have the Junior Nationals, which will take place at Satry Hill, and also over at Mohawk Mountain, the Nordic Combined. I'll tell you what, both Mohawk Mountain and the volunteers at Swasa always do an amazing job. Doesn't matter what the weather is, they get the job done.
Right, and of course the parade that began the Junior National competition here on Tuesday night, they still marched even in the rain, so bless them. And we have 4 days coming up of jumping, cross-country skiing. If you watch the Olympics this year, the cross-country skiing is the most thrilling because they're really flying and giving 100% of all their body effort. That's going to be at Mohawk. I believe it's in the afternoons. The ski jumping is in the morning, starting from 9. We have more information on page A5 and also the link with the schedules, and it's recommended that you check every day, and there's no entry fee to come and see these exciting events.
And if you want to check every day, you can go to jumpfest.org, and they have the schedule up there, and they also have the U.S. schedule up there for the organizing committee that brings brings these skiers into town. We go to the story about changing the way we eat and farm, and that involves combating climate change.
This is the second theme of this issue, which is farming, and especially farming and climate change. And Jonathan Safran Foer was the speaker for the Salisbury Forum and went into great depth about how we farm, how we eat, and, of course, how the change of climate is impacting the future of how we eat.
Yeah, it's, you know, and what's interesting is the climate change mixed with the eating habits of the world, in both the advanced countries that have food and the other countries that don't have what we have, makes for an interesting mix of things. It's a pretty cool story that that I follow up from a documentary that I saw just the last week that all goes into changing the way we eat and farm. It all goes in, and then you add climate change on top of that, and it's a pretty big story. I don't know whether this is good or bad, but 235 years of election results are now online.
We've been very happy as a newspaper with Secretary of the State Denise Merrill and the way that she conveys information. I would say in my personal experience of covering elections over the years for the Lakeville Journal, it's not always easy to get election data from the Secretary of the State's office, and it's often a struggle. And we've often had a conflict between the counts that are available at Town Hall and the counts that are online at the state website, which for the first couple of years, I would say there were several towns that just never sent them in. And so we would often be scrambling on the Wednesday morning after an election to try and collect data and then to try and reconcile it, and often to read, you know, handwritten numbers and hand-tallied math. So we love Denise Merrill for making it very easy for anybody to go online and see those election results very early in the morning on the day after an election. And now she's put on 235 years of statewide election results on the Internet, and you can't see town election results because as described, not always easy to track down all of that data, but for us as journalists, a very interesting collection of data.
All right. Well, of course, this is FFA week, February 19th through the 26th. You've got stories on celebrating future of agricultural leaders. Also, once again, how climate is affecting our local farms, and also supporting people that support the FFA.
Right. And so the FFA, people often say to me, why do you call it the FFA? Why don't you say what the name of the full organization is? And it's because they don't use the name of the full organization anymore. But this very good story from the FFA reporter, Mackenzie Casey, it explains the history of the FFA, which is Future Farmers of America, and how this organization has grown nationwide to be much, much more than just farming. Not that farming is not nothing, is not important. It's hugely important. But also, in addition to that, they do agriculture, and they do forestry, and they do law, and they do retail, and they do nurseries, and floral design. So really a lot going on at the FFA, explained really wonderfully there, and again talking about what it looks like for students at our FFA here in Housatonic Valley Regional High School, which is one of the oldest FFAs in the state, I believe.
And it's one of the most respected. They just have an outstanding track record. Yeah, agribusiness is agribusiness, and it touches just about every part of our lives. It's not just farming. So,
coming up in Sharon at the Sharon Historical Society has lots of local people, including people that have gone through HUSI and that have gone through our, as you said, extraordinary FFA program. And they'll be doing a panel discussion, the first of a series of three, and it's going to be Rebecca Ridgway, Sarah Paley, and Matt Freund. So East Canaan, Cornwall, and Sharon talking about, again, climate change and our local farms, which is that's our tomatoes.
Good story by Patrick Sullivan about students revealing the history of slavery in New England.
The Salisbury School, which is the private boys' boarding school, I shouldn't say private, I should say independent boys' boarding school in Salisbury, has really been digging deep over recent years about our state and our part of the state's participation in slavery and unfair treatment of other humans. And they've done an extensive amount of research and are presenting that research in Zoom presentations. So Patrick covered the first one. There are two more to come, and you can get information on how to sign in for the upcoming talks.
All right, let's go to Cornwall. They're going to wait. Before we go there, the herbicide spraying on the tracks in Cornwall, once again.
It's the opposite of farming.
Yeah.
So in the sense that farming is like we're trying to get stuff to grow. The herbicide, the state, you know, of course, the Housatonic Railroad, which travels through our region and does, you know, move material for companies back and forth. The tracks get overgrown with weeds, and it makes it very dangerous for the trains to travel through it, and it also it breaks up the tracks themselves. So they're, of course, spraying. And in Cornwall, it's upsetting because they're too widely spraying. They're just taking a big gun and just blowing herbicide all over the place, and they're killing a lot of trees. So there's now a bunch of dead trees all along the path of the train. So I feel like Cornwall's been trying to get them to be more targeted and a little more responsible about it. The state has stepped in and has tried to work with the two sides of this issue to get more control over it. And there's been a plan that the railroad company has to present every year, and yet every year they continue to overspray. And as Gordon Ridgway, the first selectman of Cornwall, says in this article, they still haven't taken down the dead trees yet, and it's upsetting to people. It's an ongoing upsetting issue.
All right, and you're talking about Myra earlier. Cornwall is going to wait to make a decision till March 1st. Meanwhile, Falls Village has voted to go with it.
Right, and Sharon, I believe, is making their decision this week. And, you know, ultimately, even Cornwall, I think, is waiting the longest just because it's a very hard decision for them emotionally to make. They just feel it's wrong. But I think eventually they're all going to have to go. And Joe Loy, who used to be the PE teacher at Cornwall Consolidated School and is my neighbor in Lakeville, has been running the Student Open Recital for many, many years. Really an extraordinary program. And fun to go to, very joyful. Janet and I both had daughters who did ballet for many years through that program. And a lot of kids doing, piano and classical guitar and jazz and many other things. So it's open to the public, and especially if you have young children, I think it's very inspiring for young children to see kids their age doing a concert.
And that is Sunday at the Salisbury Congregational Church at 3 p.m., and masks are required. And also, the Salisbury Association, once again, has special hours this week because they are showing all the Olympic history and the history of ski jumping and Saintry Hill in Salisbury.
Fascinating, and I'm sad to confess that I haven't gone yet, but I'm definitely going this week. There are so many Olympians from around here, and so much of who we are as a region really comes from these incredible men and women and the participation they had in the athletic events.
And, I can remember 15 years ago, it's just unbelievable, 15 years ago when the junior nationals first came to Salisbury, a lot of people nationally, they're used to the term Salisbury is ski jumping, and people laughed. Well, they didn't laugh when they came here and visited and saw how important ski jumping is in the history of Salisbury and the money that was raised to put up the new jump so they could bring in the junior nationals every 5 years. It was an eye-opener to a lot of people across the country about ski jumping in this neck of the woods. And people forget there were ski jumps in just about every town.
Have that wonderful book by Ariel Picton Kobayashi, which talks about ski jumping here. And again, we have some of the top jumpers from all across America under the age of 17 competing here. Some of these athletes will go on to the Olympics, and as you said, Marshall, they all, once they've jumped here, say this is their favorite place to jump. It's very intimate. The crowd is right there. They get a lot of crowd support. And also when they're out walking around town, as they're doing right now, you can see everybody walking through Salisbury Village. People are really supportive and really welcome them.
Let's go to the opinion page in the editorials. Janet, the editorial, The Power of Regional Thinking.
Right. We're in an area of Connecticut that, we're sparsely populated, and we don't have, a lot of power in Hartford, but it helps if we can gather together and get some critical mass. And this has happened with different organizations over the course of time. But right now it's the Northwest Hills Council of Governments, and we talk about what they do. Patrick has a story about them this week, and we look at what they have done over the course of time and what they're looking at doing now to bring in funding to the towns and what they see as important. So, of course, we do mention garbage. How can we not? And, there's just so much going on. Internet, if we can have access to better funding and better infrastructure because we can cooperate with towns among us. All of our issues are so interrelated. This is one way to do it. We talk about the fact that, there are people who want to maintain the individual towns' identities, and of course that's very New England and very appropriate, and there should be questions asked whenever there is a group speaking for 21 other towns. But think about it and read it and let us know your thoughts.
And the letters to the editor range from the Town of Salisbury Plan of Conservation Survey, the Railroad Depot, a Wag the Dog situation, and to go back, we were talking about ski jumping 50 years ago today and turning back the pages, Vigor Thornton of Salisbury named to the National Ski Hall of Fame.
Yes, it's just so fascinating what Norma Bosworth finds in the archives, which are so accessible to everyone. So, you know, if you like reading, turning back the pages, by all means go online to Scoville Library and look at some of our archives. And don't miss Carolyn McDonough's memories of Lakeville and Salisbury, too. She goes back and remembers where everything was and what it was, and if anybody sees anything she wrote and says, wait a minute, I think this was there, by all means, let us know.
All right. And, of course, your other viewpoint, Helen Klein Ross with Hidden Histories and Lonnie Carter or Sovereign State.
Right. Helen Klein Ross is writing about the forgotten pandemic from 1918 to 21, and fascinating. And it is great. She has people helping her do research on this, who she credits here, and it really is fascinating to see how it affected our area and, you know, the lives of the people who were here at that time.
And I had a nice conversation with Robert from La Gomera. Just something relaxing talking about somebody with a heavy French accent. He was talking about his Zoom event where he showed you how to cook a chicken fricassee, and you've got Cynthia, a nice story, a delicious dinner, no matter who cooks it.
And we say no matter who cooks it because, as Robert said, sometimes they do have it on the menu. You can go and Robert will make it for you, but you can also make it at home. My friend Dana and I watched the Zoom and tried to follow along, but he went really fast, but it was fun. And we happily, the Hotchkiss Library of Sharon included the recipe, so we were able to make it. It was delicious, and they have two more cooking programs coming up. And Sharon Playhouse has got some programs going in, which is very exciting. And they've got TAP coming up. What was the date on March 5th? But then they've got a couple of really exciting things coming up. And Andrus Nichols, who is sort of a beloved local person, is back again after having done some really interesting theater work in New York City and is teaching class in monologue at Sharon Playhouse. I think that's sold out already. But coming up in April, she's doing something super cool, which is there's a modern revision of The Scarlet Letter, and the actress Gretchen Mol, who lives in the area, is going to be playing Hester Prynne. And how cool is that?
All right. You've got a story on the changes at the Sloan Museum.
That's a talk that's coming up tonight. I plan to watch it at the Sloan Museum. Very interesting place. I think that people, it's like the ski jumps. It's one of those things I'm surprised that more people don't know about it. People who live up here often are fascinated with old building styles and old tools. And if you want to learn about that, Eric Sloan is your man. Beautiful books that he's done with hand-done drawings. And also his antique tool collection, which is at the Sloan Museum. It's part of the larger Connecticut Antique Machinery campus. But a lecture on the history of it and what's coming up tonight, information on how to sign up is there. We've got a really lovely article by Alexander Wilburn about why he loves the work of Edith Wharton, who famously, of course, is from Head the House in Lenox, but wrote so much about New York City and New York City society. And Mark Scarborough, the beloved book workshop leader, is teaching a series of classes on Wharton starting on Tuesdays, March 8th in the morning. Information there on how to sign up. And then K.K. Kozik, who has my old house in Sharon, so I am always very connected to K.K., but also just love her work, which is very evocative of the part of the world that we live in. And she has a big show up at the Berkshire School in Sheffield and a couple works down at the Kinnis Barnes Fine Art in Kent.
All right, and the Tri-Corner Real Estate is out this week.
It is, and, you know, plenty of properties and homes to look at. Even though we're hearing so much has been sold and people are struggling to find properties, homes and apartments to live in, this is the place to look, so give it a read and see what's out there.
All right, and I want to plug your cohorts at the Millerton News with a big story, really, where Mr. Trotta went on record as the plaza's under contract. Not many details to be revealed, but I think that's good news for everybody.
Well, it certainly is, isn't it? You know, that grocery store in the Millerton Square Plaza closed in 2019 and left Millerton without a grocery store. Joseph Skip Trotta, I think many of our listeners know him, spoke at length with editor Whitney Joseph in Millerton and really talked about the history of how we got here, as well as the fact that they are looking to, you know, transform it, and they believe it will go through. So we certainly hope it does.
Well, and the whole thing is it's the whole plaza. That's the great thing about it. That whole plaza will be developed on that end of Millerton, which is got to be good news for us, for a store, and good news for business, and also good news it will clean up and have something bright and new on that entrance to Millerton, which comes out of Connecticut.
Right. You know, this will be a game changer, and certainly as it should be. It was a very vibrant area for many years, and so, you know, time for that to happen again, that's for sure. We just hope everything works out, and do read this if you don't know the history of why it happened the way it happened. Skip does give the history pretty carefully in talking about Hannaford, et cetera, so do read that. If even you thought you knew, but you forgot, yeah.
All right. Well, that's this week in the Lakeville Journal. Of course, on your newsstands, you can also get it delivered to your home. And on the web, the way I get it, tricornernews.com. You can subscribe to that and have your access to either the Lakeville Journal or the Millerton News. Have a great week, guys. We'll speak to you next week.
You too.
Thanks so much. You too.
That is this week in the Lakeville Journal. Once again, tricornernews.com. On the web and on your local newsstands as well.